The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's. That's wrong.
You know, I listened to this continued rhetoric about draining the swamp. I frankly have a better idea. I think we should fill the swamp and let the gators have their way. Good evening. Welcome to another installment of Protecting Your Wealth here on the National Intel Report this Tuesday evening, October the 19th. Jeffrey Bennett here for the next hour. It's been an interesting week since we've been together last. I've got some minor health issues that occasionally hit me hard, and they did so last Thursday. And right now I'm just tired out, but we're here. And we continue to remain available. I have a gentleman who I owe a horrible apology to. He got a hold of me late last week, wanted to see about acquiring some gold, about $3,000 worth. And I've not forgotten. I have been under a massive amount of work-related strain, and I will endeavor to make that call tomorrow. If you know who I'm talking about, you can always give me a call tonight after I'm off the air. I can be reached at 623-327-1778. Be more than happy to talk with you. Markets today are kind of interesting. Not anything to get excited about, but there is an auspicious anniversary that took place today. We'll talk about that in a few moments. Dow Jones Industrial, no big deal, up a little, almost 5.5 points to close at 23,163. S&P 500 up less than a full point at 25,62. NASDAQ was down over 19 points to close at 66.05. Now, oil, they continue to play with. And what amazes me is so much of the oil is based upon what, you know, we got to pay for a barrel coming out of Saudi Arabia. So it's up 12 cents at $51.41 a barrel. But, you know, that's still less than half what it was just a couple of years ago. But I don't see the gasoline prices necessarily being half what they were 2, 3, 4 years ago, any more than you do. So that's one of those interesting things. Plus the fact that the majority of the oil that we import in this country does not come from the Middle East, and yet we're constantly over there fighting for oil rights or whatever the case may be. It reminds me of a James Bond movie, the one with Pierce Brosnan, and I can't think of what it was called, but it had to do with a daughter who'd allegedly been kidnapped and was being held for ransom because her father was with some very wealthy oil baron. And it turns out she was in on the whole scam, and she was responsible for the death of her father because he didn't come through as quickly as he felt she should have. And, you know, here's Pierce Brosnan driving out there with his, I think the one car he had, a Beamer he was driving. And the whole thing turns out to be about a big battle on who's going to get the rights to put, you know, oil going from one end of the European aspect to the other. And I often think about that. I think about the things that always popped up in James Bond movies that were so damn timely to what we see going on in the world today. Over on the precious metal side of the aisle, because I don't have a lot of time to spend with this, we see gold in the aftermarket up $1.40 at $1,291.40. Silver currently sitting at about a little over 17.25, down a little bit from where it's been, but still very affordable, very beneficial to get a hold of. So if silver is something that's in your mind, you want to talk about some 90% junk silver, you want to talk about silver rounds, silver American Eagles, do give us a call at 623-327-1778. Once again, not while I'm on the air. I don't have 20, 30, 40 brokers sitting around waiting to answer your phone calls, okay? You call, you get me. And that's the reality factor. Also, you can email me through our website, KettleMorainePreciousMetals.com. The email address is gold@KettleMorainePreciousMetals.com. Some of the headlines that are out there, the whole Bitcoin thing keeps coming back and back and back and back. In an article called Bitcoin is Not New and Improved Money, I think we shared some of that with you last week. Another one, cryptocurrencies and avoiding the poof moment. And I'm not going to share these stories with you, but I think the one key out of the poof moment column talks about not assuming that your transactions are private. Don't store too much value. Thieves, both private and government, are drooling. Speculation, short term, at great risk, with both eyes open, but this is not for long term store of value. I've taken on a subtitle for every article that I may post about Bitcoin. Short term, it can make you a ton of money, but my God, be prepared to be selling some of your gains off. Don't be foolish and sit on it waiting for the big kahuna to come through. My subtitle, Trending Toward a Cashless Society. Because I believe more and more that's exactly what is happening. It's playing directly into the hands. Oh, Jamie Dimon can play the little word games he wants, all he wants. But I think that that's exactly what the banking structure is moving toward. Some of the other headlines that are out there, tax cuts without spending cuts will not grow the economy. Trump proposed last month a tax plan that would lower the top individual tax rate to 35% from 39.6%, but it'll also lower the corporate income tax rate to 20% from 35%. But the plan says nothing about how spending will be cut to avoid increasing these deficits. It's not this simple as they would like us to believe. Zimbabwe, we spoke about them several weeks ago, has inflated once again. They're literally at a point where they're increasing their inflation almost every 24.7 hours. That's pretty scary stuff. You know, we hear about, Venezuela or whatever that the problems they're having? Zimbabwe's having it as well. Gold and silver. You think prices are manipulated? Well, we're taking a look at. Almost everybody complains or laments how both gold and silver are being manipulated, and they are, going back at least to the 1920s and 30s, and not just recently. You want to take a look at some of these historical pieces. They're quite interesting to look at. Over the weekend, notified Conway Bank of Conway Springs, Kansas, has assumed all the deposits of the Farmers and Merchants State Bank of Argonia, Kansas. We begin to see this starting again with the bank foreclosures. U.S. credit card delinquencies continue to increase. I think we spoke about that last week. And, I mean, it's big. It's huge. J.P. Morgan's bait-and-switch mortgage deal. I'm not going to have time to get into that one. But once again, J.P. Morgan has always got their fingers in the pot. It's absolute insanity. Oh, headline. Move to digital currencies accelerates as the PBOC successfully test algos for digital money. And the fools are playing directly into the hands of the central banks and a cashless society. Amazing. This is an interesting headline. We don't know how to replace the vast gold deposits of the past. Well, of course not. Because they've leased it. They've sold it, they've stolen it, and there's no way to get it back except in a paper format. These are the kind of headlines we're seeing out there. part one of a series, How the Elite Dominate the World. Part one entitled, Debt is a Tool of Enslavement. Parts two and part three are available out there. We'll have them posted. So what else is going on? Well, I mentioned to you earlier, this is an anniversary of sorts. October the 19th, 1987. One of the worst days in stock market history. 30 years later, it would be oh so comforting to believe that it could not happen again. Yet that's true only in the narrowest sense. Regulatory and technological change has made an exact repeat of that terrible day impossible. But we're still at risk. Because fundamentally, that market crash of 1987 was a mass stampede set off through viral contagion. My friends, that kind of panic can happen again, and I believe it will. I think most of you believe it as well. All of this sobering conclusion is best based on the research of Robert Shiller. Shiller won a Nobel Memorial Prize in Economic Sciences in 2013, partly for his work on the market impact of social psychology. Shiller sent out thousands of questionnaires to investors within 4 days of the 1987 crash, motivated by the belief that we will never understand such events unless we ask people for the reasons for their actions and for the thoughts and the emotions associated with them all. And so from that perspective, Shiller believes a rough analogy for that 87 market collapse could be found in another event. The panic of August 28th of 2016. LA International Airport. People believed erroneously that they were in grave danger. False reports of gunfire at the airport in an era in which shootings in large crowds had already occurred. And all this set people running for the exits. And once the panic began, others ran as well. We saw that in Las Vegas a few weeks ago. But in essence, the LA International Airport analogy is exactly what Shiller found to have happened 30 years ago in the stock market. By late in the afternoon of that day, the momentous nature of that day was already clear that the stock market had fallen more than 20%, the biggest one-day drop in percentage terms in the annals of the modern American market. And he realized that this was a once-in-a-lifetime research opportunity. So he worked late that night and the next, designing a questionnaire that would reveal investors' real thinking. And those are the days before widespread use of the Internet. And so he relied on paper and ink and old-fashioned snail mail. And within 4 days, he had mailed out 3,250 questionnaires to a broad range of individual and institutional investors. The response rate was 33%. The survey provided a wealth of information. As we talk this evening, I'm looking at basically copies of some of those questionnaires and letters and responses. I mean, people to the point that they found out about while they were driving their vehicles. They were checking their markets every single hour. Number of people involved in their account, two, what was the date? Simple questions like that. Shiller's findings focused on psychological data differed sharply from those of the official explanations embodied in the report of the Brady Commission, the task force set up by President Ronald Reagan, chaired by Nicholas F. Brady, who would go on to become Treasury Secretary. And the commission pinned the crash on causes like the high merchandise trade deficit of the era and on a tax proposal that might have made some corporate takeovers less likely. The report went on to say that the initial decline ignited mechanical price-insensitive selling by a large number of institutions employing portfolio insurance strategies and a small number of mutual fund groups reacting to redemptions. high merchandise trade deficit. That reminds me of some of the other headlines I've seen today. Stories from out in the country about how they're going to be managing to get by with their big box Sears stores closing because Sears is no longer a profitable entity. Oh, they're not all closing. They're going to milk it as long as they possibly can, but more and more of the big boxes are closing. JCPenney's began trying to downsize a few years ago and get out of the shopping malls and went out and got their own piece of property and built themselves a little store, and frankly, it hasn't made any difference. Because both Sears and JCPenney's forgot what got them started. Catalog sales. It should have been the easiest transition in the world for them to do internet sales, but they just couldn't grasp it. Back in those days, the panic in 1987 in New York spread all the way to the Sydney Stock Exchange in Australia. But portfolio insurance? What the heck is that? Something invented in the 1970s by Hayne Leland and Mark Rubenstein, two economists in the University of California at Berkeley, of course. That's a phrase we don't hear much anymore, but received a lot of the blame for what took place on that day in 87. You see, portfolio insurance was often described as a form of program trading. It would cause the automatic selling of stock futures when prices fell and indirectly set off the selling of stocks themselves, which would protect the seller but exacerbate the price decline. Why do I share all this with you? Because you need to understand how the tools, how the mechanism works when it begins to go. I'm looking at a photograph today I've not seen in many, many years. And I've seen it before. Very well-dressed man. Natty-looking guy, double-breasted suit, nicely polished shoes, nice little derby hat. But there's something wrong with it. He's holding his hand up to his ear. Well, the only problem with it is they didn't have mobile or cell phones back then, so I'm not quite sure what this guy's doing unless he's scratching his head. He's got a sign on the front of the car, beautiful car, convertible. Looks like a Packard. Oh, yeah, it is. $100 will buy this car. Must have cash. Lost all in the stock market. Well, the Brady Commission found that portfolio insurance accounted for substantial selling on October the 19th, but the commission could not know how much of this selling would have happened in a different form if portfolio insurance had never been invented. In fact, portfolio insurance was just a repackaged version of the age-old practice of selling when the market started to fall. With hindsight, it's clear that it was neither a breakthrough discovery nor the main cause of the decline. But ultimately, Schiller says, I believe we need to focus on the people who adopted the technology, who really drove prices down, not on the computers. Portfolio insurance had a major role in another sense. There was a narrative that spread before October the 19th that it was dangerous. And fear of portfolio insurance may have been more important than the program trading itself. On October the 12th, this is once again 1987, the Wall Street Journal said that portfolio insurance could start a huge slide in stock prices that feeds on itself and could put the market into a tailspin. And on Saturday, October 17th, 2 days before the crash, the New York Times said portfolio insurance could push slides into scary falls. Well, such stories may have inclined many investors to think that other investors would sell if the market began to head down, encouraging a cascade. I look at headlines of the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Times, the New York Times, the Santa Ana Register, San Francisco Chronicle, Washington Inquirer, Wall Street Journal. All these publications and more all grappled with the biggest one-day stock market decline in percentage terms in Wall Street's history. But why? Why so many years later do people continue to put all their trust, all their faith in a market that they know damn well is manipulated by other people? people that don't have you and I in their best interest. They only have themselves and their profit to their handlers. That's the only interest they have. Well, in reality, Shiller's survey showed that traditional stop-loss orders actually were reported to have been used by twice as many institutional investors on that day as the more trendy portfolio insurance. And in his survey, Shiller asked respondents to evaluate a list of news articles that appeared in the days before the market collapse and to add articles that were on their minds on that day. And he asked how important those were to you personally, as opposed to how others thought about them. And what became fascinating about their answers is that it was missing, is what was missing from them. Nothing about market fundamentals stood out as a justification for widespread selling or for staying out of the market instead of buying on the dip. Such purchases would have bolstered share prices. But furthermore, individual assessments of news articles bore little relation to whether people bought or sold stocks on that day. Oh no, instead it appeared that a powerful narrative impending market decline was already embedded in many minds, and stock prices had dropped in the preceding week. And on the morning of October the 19th, the graphic in the Wall Street Journal explicitly compared prices from 1922 through 29 with those from 1980 to 1987. Awful lot of parallels. A few contrasts. But most of it were parallels. The declines that had already occurred in October of 1987 looked an awful lot like those that occurred just before the October 1929 stock market crash. The graphic in the leading financial paper, along with an article that accompanied it, raised the thought that today, yes, this very day, could be the beginning of the end for the stock market. It was one factor that contributed to the shift in mass psychology. And as Shiller has shared with us in the past, markets move when other investors believe they know what other investors are thinking. Shiller says that, in short, my survey indicated that October 19th, 1987 was a climax of disturbing narratives. It became a day of fast reactions amid a mood of extreme crisis in which it seemed that no one knew what was going on and that you had to trust your own gut feeling. But given the state of communications then, it's amazing how quickly the panic spread. 1987. My God, I began to work for Viking International Trading in I think May or June of 1985. What we had for computers were little tiny Macs, little 11, 12, 13 inch screens. They were slow. We're just getting into things. We were still working off a teletype machine, getting our news printed out before we went on the air each night. And yet all of this story takes place in 1987. The state of communications? Shiller said he first heard the market was plummeting while lecturing to his morning class at Yale. A student in the back of the room was listening to a miniature transistor radio with an earphone, interrupted me to tell us all about the market. And right after class, I walked to my broker's office at Merrill Lynch in downtown New Haven, Shiller says, to assess the mood there. My broker appeared harassed and busy and had time enough only to say, "Don't worry." If your broker says "don't worry" to you, it's time to worry. But the broker was right for long-term investors. The market began rising later that week, and in retrospect, stock charts show that buy and hold investors did fairly well if they stuck to their strategies. But that's easy to say now. Like the 2016 airport stampede, the 1987 stock market fall was a panic. based by fear, based on rumors, not on real danger. In 1987, I just lost my place. Wow. A powerful feedback loop from human to human, not computer to computer. A loop from human to human set the market spinning. Let's face it. Communications at that point was predominantly still on telephone. We didn't run cell phones with just cell phones are nothing but pocket computers. Me, I'm an old fashioned guy. I still use a telephone for a cell phone for making calls and taking calls. Sometimes checking on my voicemail. Unfortunately, my involvement with texting is more family-related crap than anything else. I could do without it. Well, there's a lot I could do with it. But when I walk out of this office, I would just as soon shut down. I don't want to be online doing moment-to-moment market reports. And is it up? Is it down? Is it sideways? Is it an innie, an outie? I don't care. When I walk out of here, I have other things to do. I'm not going into the post office to ship mail out or pick up mail and sit there on the phone yapping away. It's rude. People don't want to hear it. They don't need to hear it. But, you know, these kind of feedback loops, they've been well documented in birds, mice, cats, Reese's monkeys, not to be confused with Reese's Pieces. In 2017, the neuroscientist Andreas Olson, Catherine Nearing, and Elizabeth Phelps described the neural mechanisms at work when fear spreads from human to human to human to human. Well, we'll have panics, but not an exact repeat of October 19th of 97. Schiller believes that in one way the situation has probably gotten worse. Technology has made viral rumor transmission much easier. But there's regulations in place that were intended to forestall another one-day market collapse of such severity. In a response to the 1987 crash and the Brady Commission report, the New York Stock Exchange instituted Rule 80B. That's a circuit breaker. And that circuit breaker, in its current amended form, shuts down trading for the day if the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index falls 20% from the previous close. And that 20% threshold is interesting. Regulators settled on a percentage decline just a trifle less than the one that occurred in 87. And that choice may have been an unintentional homage to the power of narratives in that episode. But 20% would still be a big drop. I mean, my God, where's the Dow sitting at today? 23,000 something? You're talking about a 4,600 point drop? What was the stock market in 87? We'll be back. Stay with us. Well, you will learn that packaging is all that heaven needs. Got the little black car, the little black dress. We got the guru and the trailer and the full course dress. We got the software, hard drive, CD-ROM. We got the exploitation.com. We got the pages.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Somewhere, I know
I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll return again to you. Oh, we are back. Well, I knew I'd find you somewhere. Find me, I'm glad. Before the break, I made one comment that in response to the 1987 crash, the Brady Commission report, the NYSE, instituted something called Rule 80B, a circuit breaker that in its current amended form shuts down trading for the day if the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index falls 20% from the previous close. My friends, the Dow Jones Industrial crossed 23,000 this week. Unbelievably high. 20% of that would be 4,600 point drop. If the right kind of human interactions build in a crescendo, we could have another monumental one-day decline. One-day market drops are not the greatest danger, of course, but the bear market that began during the financial crisis of 07 was a far more consequential downturn, and it took months to wend its way toward a market bottom in March of 09. This should not be understood as a prediction that the market will have another great fall. However, it is simply an acknowledgement that such events involve the human psyche on a mass scale. We should not be surprised if they occur, or even if, for a protracted period, the market remains remarkably calm. And yet, we're at risk. With luck, another perfect storm, like the one that struck 30 years ago today, might not happen in the next 30 years. But me? I ain't Robert Shiller, but I ain't going to bet on it. Think about what happened in 1929. And you know, everybody talks about that horrible Tuesday or whatever it was in 1929. But what they forget to acknowledge and discuss, and it's something I covered in depth well over 20 years ago in a series that we did called All the King's Men, is that the market didn't just drop. The stock market, Wall Street, hit an all-time high in May of that year, a figure that would not be seen again until 1955. That, my friends, is spooky to consider. Wall Street hit a market high in May of 1929. And it would not see that high again until 1955. That's 25, 26 years. Is that right? The 40s, the 50s? Yeah. All the 30s, all the 40s, half of the 50s, that's 26 years. And I'm going to tell you something. That's scary. You and I won't be around to see it. But I know that I want something to pass on to my kids, to my grandkids. My grandkids more than the kids. My kids have already spent their share. Ain't getting no more, TC. Ain't going to happen. And so, now we travel overseas for a little while. We don't have a friend in China or Russia. Certainly North Korea, not by any stretch of the imagination. Back in November a year ago, an article entitled Cashless World, One Out of Three People Never Use Cash. Fewer and fewer people understand the importance of using cash to protect themselves from an overarching government warlord. Now, at that time, China's use of digitized currency was growing at about 40% a year, which means that millions of people every year freely hand over their cash and opt to use their cell phone or online currency transfers or a plastic debit credit card to make 100% of their purchases. We see that nothing short of happily going into the gulag of the digital enslavement. And I see it every day. My granddaughter and I may go into Starbucks a couple times a week for our morning coffee and just to say hello to some friends and people we've gotten to know over the last couple of years. And the number of people that use their telephones to order in advance, and they walk in the door and they pick it up and it's ready for them. And the people at the drive-thrus that whip out their debit card, I'd never see a single person in the drive-thru pull out cash. There's times I use my debit card. I'd prefer not to. I prefer cash. My only problem with having cash is if I've got cash in my pocket, I swear to God, my kids smell it. Dad, can I borrow five? Can I borrow 10? You know, this kind of stuff. But a few days ago, we learned that China is taking another step toward being a cashless society. Not just any cashless society, but the largest populated nation on the planet. And keep this in mind, that all of this comes The announcement is coming on the heels of China's closest ally, Russia, announcing that she would be issuing a crypto ruble, a digitized currency. Once those two nations go cashless, that is going to be a huge blow to hard currency in circulation all over the world. A few days ago, Cointelegraph reported that local news sources in Russia had been informed by the Minister of Communications, one Nikolay Nikiforov, that Putin had approved a plan for the issue of a crypto ruble. Of course, there was no detail as relates to a timeline, so no subsequent information was available at that time. And coincidentally or not, Nikiforov is quoted as saying, "I confidentially declare that we run crypto ruble for one simple reason. If we do not, then after 2 months, our neighbors in the Eurasec will." What's Eurasec? Euro, Asia, God knows what else. So our friends over at Zero Hedge reported that in a story that seems to have gone largely unnoticed by the Western press, China Daily reported that the PBOC has successfully designed a prototype that could regulate its future supply of digital fiat currency. And in a report, the PBOC inched closer to digital currency. That's what the newspaper stated. China's central bank has completed trial runs on the algorithms needed for digital currency supply, taking it a step closer to addressing the technological challenges associated with digital currencies. That, according to a top official associated with the project. Oh, China's been preparing for digital currency since early 2016. But in June of this year, the PBOC finished several digital money trials involving fake transactions between it and some of the country's commercial banks. Given over-invoicing of imports and the shenanigans in the shadow banking WMP sector, we suspect that the commercial banks took to these trials like proverbial flies to feces. The China Daily article goes on to suggest that while there is no timetable, China is likely to become the first country that would deploy a digital fiat currency. Oh, far be it for us to question the accuracy of the China Daily, which Wikipedia notes is often used as a guide to Chinese government policy. But you see, we were expecting Sweden, already the world's most cashless society, to be first. Been widely reported that the introduction of a e-krona is being investigated by the Riksbank. Forbes noted last month that the inquiry is expected to be finalized in late 2019. It would not replace cash, which accounts for 1% of the transactions in Sweden. That according to a recent BBC report, but they operate alongside physical cash initially. I'm going to tell you something. That's spooky stuff. Real spooky stuff. And I'm going to tell you why. Because moments ago, if I can find it, of course I won't be able to find it just because I want to find it. No, I'm not going to find it. You mother schmuckers. No, it's not here. It's just flat up disappeared on me. Can't find it. Nope. That upsets me. It had to do with one of the foreign nations, and I cannot recall if it was Sweden or whom. No, it's disappeared. This website moves things around so fast that I cannot always keep track of what it is I was looking for. It had something to do not so much with the cashless society, but it had to do with either Sweden or Switzerland basically admitting the fact that the days of their democracy are coming unraveled. So now we return to the cryptocurrency, China. They expect to be the first. It's going to be a while before the currency goes public. That according to Yi Gang, senior engineer of the Institute of Digital Money at the PBOC. That is, a number of concerns need to be solved. They need to manage the risks, improve efficiency. He added, government also needs to factor whether public would use a currency. We know the answer to that. Yes, we do. The public is already using one form of digital currency. You can call it what you want. A debit card is nothing more than digital currency. Okay, it's that simple. You keep thinking in terms of dollars. They keep thinking in terms of digital numbers, little digits. Oh, sure, it'd be a lot quicker if the Chinese citizens could somehow use it to get their savings out of the country. Yeah, but no, the Chinese aren't going to allow that to happen. All of this, you know, when you go back to the serious work of the PBOC's Institute of Digital Money, Yao Qiang, director general, no less, said that the successful stimulation of money supply had paved the way for the central bank to become the future sole regulator and policymaker governing the value of digital currency. Well, geez, that kind of sounded like a veiled explanation for the recent heavy-handed clampdown on Bitcoin trading in the Middle East Kingdom. Indeed, the story notes that unlike a Bitcoin or other digital money issued by private sector, the digital fiat currency has same regal status as the Chinese yuan. Well, all of this sounds like a rebuttal to Bitcoin and other privately issued cryptocurrencies. Maybe a way for the Chinese government to begin the process of outlawing private cryptocurrencies. It's not just another step in moving to a cashless society. It's a major step in attacking cryptocurrencies as they continue to gain notoriety. And there have been those arguing these totalitarian governments like China, the U.S., Russia, and most other governments are not going to simply hand over the mechanism that produces their power and their control. What? Totalitarian governments like China, the U.S., and Russia? Whoa! Somebody's finally hitting the nail on the head as to maybe what we truly are here. You see, we're now seeing the first real steps by a major government to mean they maintain their control and power through the issuance of cryptocurrency. If the people want to enslave themselves through the use of digital currency, why wouldn't the government be on board with that idea and fully assist the citizens in their desire to willingly hand over said sovereignty? Oh, my friends, it's going to happen. It's a matter of who, what, why, when, and where. It's scary. People don't get it. And some of the people you don't get it are maybe living down in your basement right now, tonight. And they never will. Because they're whiners and they're complainers and they're crybabies. Why can I get something for free? Yeah. That's scary. I think that we're going to see the advent of cryptocurrency. Because we're already seeing it. I've already shared with you stories of clients of mine whose own children were able to use a MasterCard, just a traditional credit card, and what he was physically paying with, and the guy behind the counter didn't know it, he was paying with cryptocurrency, he was paying with Bitcoin, because he had a MasterCard that was recognizable. That MasterCard could have been paying in cigarettes with no filters. It could have been paying in gallons of gasoline, barrels of oil. You don't know. And maybe you don't care. Think about that. These are the things we all should be thinking about. I believe that in my lifetime, the day will come that we will no longer have cash. You know, last week was the old British pound, also known as the round pound, is no longer accepted. A gold coin is no longer accepted for, as payment for goods in the UK. People had just so much time to turn them in to receive a corresponding value with their new currency, their new bills or dollars or coin or whatever you want to call it. Money. Don't you find all of this just a bit scary? I certainly do. These are the reasons I believe that, as I've said, if you wish to do some dabbling, I read a piece today about a woman and her husband who apparently put, I don't know, $10,000 into Bitcoin or whatever the case may be. And some months later, it was worth over $300,000. My numbers may be a little askew. I remember the $300,000. That's all well and good. Now they've got $300,000. Sitting in what? Take 20, 25%, maybe 30%, depending on how comfortable you are in other arenas. And buy gold, buy silver, put it away, shut up about it. Don't brag to mommy and daddy or your step-parents that you bought it. Don't mention it to your best friend at work, your cousin, your cohorts, your anybody. You keep it to you and the wife, and you put it aside. You just shut up about it. Remember, silver will be more spendable on a day-to-day basis. Oh, and I think the thing to keep in mind is that whether one wants to believe it or not, because we've not really experienced this in our lifetime. Well, some of us have. Silver and gold throughout history have remained spendable. They're recommended and recognized as money. Oh, they may not recognize a picture of George Washington on an old 90% silver coin because a guy might be, you know, Ahmed Pagrad from the Middle East somewhere, from India or Pakistan. And I'm not trying to be rude. That's not my intent. I'm not trying to be racist. Where's this piece I read today? Lord knows. Come on, where is it? I don't know what to do with it. Interesting piece. I can't stand that. My eyes are getting very glazed and very foggy. And it's been a long day for me, and I will get off the air, and I will probably rest for several hours. And when I do, I will then wake up later, and I will get back to work. I don't know where I saved this. I had a very interesting piece to share, but it's basically put away. What preparations have you taken? We've got some folks over the last few weeks who have acquired rolls of peace dollars, some partial and some full bags of 90% junk silver. We've got clients who have acquired moderate amounts of gold, other forms of silver, Mexican libertads, Austrian Philharmonics in both gold or silver. Maple Leafs, Canadian Maple Leafs. American Eagle bullion coins. Forget that so-called collector's stuff. Got to have the proof sets. No, you don't. Because who's ever going to sell those to you is going to charge you an outrageous sum of money, and you ain't going to get it back on the other end. Don't get hoodwinked into that nonsense. You understand me? Yeah. Absolutely. I'm trying to find something, and I cannot find it. No, that would figure just because I want it. I don't know where it's at. No, not there. Not there. Well, that's at least correct. I had something today I was going to share with you. And then I forgot about it because I got sidetracked with another project, and I got back to it just about airtime and started looking for it, and I can't remember where it's segued to, segued. Given working with my various suppliers today, some of them were out of the realm of what I could have talked to you about today. And the one supplier that I wanted to go with to see what kind of cooking packages he might have available to us, his mother is elderly and she's broken her hip. She's in the hospital. That's where he's at. So he and I could not get together to spend some time to try to manipulate a package for this week. But understand, I will find whatever fits your neck. What fits around your neck. Yeah. Fits your pocketbook. Makes you smile. Whatever the case may happen to be. We just weren't able to get together on it. So I do apologize. I had talked to John about the potential of coming on another time this week with an offer. Tomorrow night I have a very important function with my granddaughter. And I will be leaving here early. I'll be leaving here by 4:30, 5 o'clock Pacific time tomorrow evening. But keep in mind, I work some pretty strange hours. Very common to be able to reach me 9, 10 o'clock at night Pacific time. Do feel free to give me a call, 623-327-1778. More than happy to talk with you about what your goals are, what it is you're trying to accomplish, what it is you're trying to leave your family. And that may include some of the IRA situation. If you've got individual retirement accounts, if you've got a 401k and you've recently left the employment of that company, give me a call. Let's talk about some of the options you have available to you. There is no one in this country more experienced with precious metals individual retirement accounts than I am, period. And we can explain to you why another time. Maybe that's one of the things I need to do because I've had several requests. Would I take a program and discuss the IRA program? And I think we'll plan on doing that one day next week. We are about the end of our time because I'm out of voice, man. And it would be appreciated if we could feasibly slip some tunes in here. I don't generally get that way, but it has been a very, very grueling day. Keep in mind, if China and Russia are heading toward cashless, don't think that Jamie Dimon and the boys and the girls in Wall Street are going to be any less stringent about pushing that issue right down our throats. Spend some time at KettleMarinePreciousMetals.com. We do endeavor to update it as much as we possibly can. I'm one guy. I cannot do it all at once. So we do what we got to do. And, yeah, we do have a load of stuff being shipped out tomorrow. I've got some 10th bags, some full bags going out. We got a lot of the peace dollars are being shipped tomorrow. I've only got one order that's a holdout. Mike, if you're out there listening, I've not received your check yet. I sent you an email today. So you folks take care. Have a great weekend. I will see y'all on Tuesday. You hear? Bye-bye.
Do you worry a lot? If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in 2 NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease. Try Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.